Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the New Statesman podcast. I'm Caroline Crampton, standing in for your regular host Helen Lewis. On this week's episode, George Eaton, Stephen Bush and Anoush Shakelian talk about Jeremy Corbyn's grassroots movement, Momentum, and then I talk to John Elledge and Barbara Speed about Donald Trump.
Hello, I'm Anoush Shakelian, Deputy Web Editor of The New Statesman, and I'm joined by Stephen Bush, our Staggers Editor, and George Eaton, our Politics Editor, to discuss the week in politics. We thought this week that we would talk a little bit about Momentum. Now, I'd like to explain what Momentum purports to be. It's the successor campaign movement to Jeremy Corbyn's leadership campaign, which is obviously very successful. But George, what do people fear it is in the party?
So the fear is that it's a vehicle for deselection and to advance the very narrow interests of Corbyn's wing of the party. And so it was set up very soon after Corbyn's victory and was seen as a bid to sort of consolidate his strength among the members, as opposed obviously to that his weakness among MPs. And this week they've announced that they're not going to allow members of other parties to attend their decision-making meetings. But the fact that they have been doing so far has been a huge point of controversy, because obviously in the 1980s, Labour had huge problems with entryism through the group Militants. And the successor party to Militants, the Socialist Party, is one of the groups that's been involved with Momentum and pushing for the deselection of MPs such as Stella Creasy and Chukwuma Mrwuna. And Deputy Leader Tom Watson's described them as a rabble. Shadow Culture Secretary Michael Douglas said he thought rabble was far too polite a word for them. And so this has caused big divisions within Corbyn's shadow cabinet. And I think such is the mistrust and suspicion of Momentum now that it's going to be very difficult for it to present itself as a unifying force.
Okay, and of course, because Momentum celebrates itself as this all-inclusive grassroots campaign that's community organising from the bottom up, it's going to be controversial for the people who are its supporters if it starts restricting who can go to its meetings, isn't it, Stephen?
Yes, I mean, that is the kind of perennial problem for the Labour Party, basically, since it was founded, is how do you police your leftward border, and indeed whether or not you police it at all. Attlee, of course, expelled activists for being connected to communists, Trotskyists, including MPs, as did Neil Kinnock. Blair and Brown didn't need to, because Kinnock had already expelled everyone. And then both Miliband and Wilson, some people would argue, then effectively sort of left the door unlocked and paved the way for versions of what we have now. But of course, there are lots of people in the Labour Party, including people on what we'd regard as the right of the Labour Party, who have what you'd call the no enemies to the left attitude. Then basically the opponent is always the Conservatives, and then things like the Socialist Party or these other smaller groups are nothing to be worried about.
Yes, I've been speaking to some people from Left Unity this week, which was a socialist fringe party that started in 2013. So it's a very new group. It's not really associated with those crusty old fringe organisations that Momentum has been worried about this week. And they're actually quite disappointed that their members are no longer going to be allowed at some of these meetings. And they say that they've got a lot of experience to bring and that they've been enthusiastic about Momentum and they've celebrated Jeremy Corbyn's victory. And now they think that Momentum are sort of giving way to the right of the Labour Party. George, do you think that kind of criticism is going to matter for the group?
I don't think it's. I don't think it will make a huge amount of difference for momentum, because I think the membership of these of groups such as Left Unity is relatively small, and so it's really of sort of symbolic importance. Mm. But the defence that momentum activists themselves make is, you know, we sent up lots of coaches to the Oldham West by-election. We helped get a Labour MP elected there. We're not interested in deselection. But the problem is that you've got a clash between young activists who are genuinely motivated by wanting Labour to succeed, and then older figures from the 1980s, such as John Landsman, for instance, who was one of the Tony Benn's campaign managers for his deputy leadership election in 1981, who are unashamed supporters of mandatory reselection. So the idea that all MPs should have to face a challenge before they're readopted by their local constituency party. And I think a big part of the problem is it's unclear whether Corbyn and McDonnell entirely disapprove of this effort. So Jeremy Corbyn said soon after he became Labour leader, "I will not support mandatory reselection," as did John McDonnell. But then MPs get nervous when they see Corbyn make comments such as "there's no hiding place for those who voted in favour of Syria airstrikes," or when McDonnell told a Momentum meeting in Lambeth the other week, "You will eventually get to select candidates who represent you." And so it seems to them as if Corbyn and McDonnell's language isn't entirely consistent. And so when they deny they're not interested in reselection, they don't entirely believe them. I think that's the other problem, because they feel as if when Momentum and groups associated with it launch deselection battles, they feel as if they may have the tacit support of the leadership.
Okay.
And the problem with Momentum is they're a lot like an appendix. When they planned to set it up during the leadership election, the overall impression, and indeed the original intention of the Corbyn campaign, was to do well enough to have a seat at the table for what we used to call the hard left, as opposed to the soft left, of the Labour Party at the highest levels of the party. And so the idea of... and so if you signed up to any of the Corbyn stuff on the website, you had to tick a thing basically saying you were okay for your data to continue to be used by the Jeremy Corbyn Campaign Supporters Limited, or whatever it was incorporated as at the time, because they had this idea that they would need this mail list as a tool for faction fights to come under a Cooper or Burnham-led Labour Party. And now, it's sort of, well, they've achieved their plan A, which was to revitalise the Labour left. It's not really clear what it is Momentum is for, other than there were some people who were young and enthusiastic on the Corbyn campaign, and some people who are old and have a lot of grudges, and indeed some people who are young and hold a lot of grudges on the Corbyn campaign. And it's not really clear what Momentum's function is beyond giving those two groups of people something to do. Because to be honest, there will be serious attempts to deselect MPs, but they will actually mainly be driven by groups, organised groups on the Labour left, that predate Momentum. So it'll be the LRC, it'll be weird little left-wing groupuscules. It's not entirely clear where Momentum fits into the Labour ecosystem. I think Liverpool's kind of the example, where they are both being hammered on their right by people who remember Militant and don't trust Momentum, but they're also being hammered on their left by Militant, who are still around and a force within Liverpool. So, yeah, it's a bit strange. They are an odd movement. It's kind of difficult to see where they'll go next.
So should Labour MPs be scared of Momentum? Is it a sinister movement, or do we just not know yet, George?
It's too early to say, I think. But I think that's precisely the problem, is that the fear is there, and that creates undoubted suspicion. And we know that there are people within Momentum who do want to deselect Labour MPs. The question is who will win that internal struggle within Momentum. And it's also true that with the boundary changes that are being introduced, a lot of Labour MPs are going to have to stand for selection. And there are pre-existing means to deselect them through what are known as trigger ballots. And so this is going to be an issue. The question is to what extent Momentum is going to support attempts to deselect MPs.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on Momentum for you. And thanks, George, and thanks, Stephen.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And now it's time for Stephen Bush's Joke of the Week.
Jeremy Corbyn came under fire towards the end of this week for jokingly quoting Enver Hoxha, the long-time dictator and commander-in-chief of Albania during its time under communism, in his Christmas address at the Christmas party for Labour Party staff. Corbyn quipped, quoting Hoxha, who he described as a tough ruler, that next year will be harder than this year. This caused a storm in Albania, among other places, where he is, according to one journalist from Albania who spoke to me about it, kind of the equivalent, they said he's the Kim Jong-il of Europe. They did not find it funny at all. However, some here in the British Labour Party thought it was very funny indeed, with one Corbyn ally quipping to me, "I don't know why people are complaining about it. Enver Hoxha only killed 10,000 bourgeois social democrats. Jeremy's driven far more than that out of the Labour Party."
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And we host the New Statesman's pop culture podcast, Seriously.
This week, we talked about horror parody show Scream Queens, the film of the Alan Bennett play Lady in the Van, and 90s children's dog-themed TV show Wishbone.
You can find us at newstatesman.com/SRSLY or on iTunes or on the podcatcher of your choice. Now, I'm joined by John Elledge and Barbara Speed, and we're going to talk about Donald Trump. As you cannot fail to have heard in the last few days, Donald Trump has really broken out onto the world stage this week with his incredibly racist views about Muslims. But going back beyond that, he's been saying terrible things for months now, and yet he's still being considered in a lot of places as a serious contender for the Republican US presidential nomination. So we're going to talk a bit about Donald Trump and all of the awfulness that he contains. So Barbara, you've been kind of following this in a UK context, because since his remarks about how all Muslims should get registered and be banned from re-entering the country and all this kind of stuff, British people have been signing petitions against him, right?
Yeah, so there's a kind of fairly official, funnily enough, petition which is to ban Donald Trump himself from entering the UK, which is obviously funny because it's a reversal of what he's trying to do with Muslims in the US. But this has actually reached now, I think, about 370,000 signatures, and 100,000 signatures is the point at which a petition can be considered to be debated in Parliament itself.
Because this was done through the Parliament website, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
The official mechanism, yeah.
And it was started by just a woman from Aberdeen, but she's campaigned against Trump's hate speech before. And although it sounds ridiculous, there is a history in the UK of not allowing people entry because of their hate speech and their views. So it is actually not as mad as it sounds. And Trump himself is actually meant to be coming to Britain in the summer to open up a golf course. So in fact, if this petition is debated in Parliament and this rule is passed, there's a chance that he could not come.
I saw Tulip Sadiq, the MP, making a similar point on Channel 4 News, where she was saying that, you know, after 7/7, we banned lots of Islamic hate preachers for exactly this reason, yeah, because the things they said don't conform with the way we as British people want to live our lives, and we consider them to be a threat. So she was saying, I really don't see how this is different.
Yeah, and I think that the danger is that people would say, well, you're being just as bad as him. But in fact, the problem with his policy is that he's doing this based solely on religion, yeah, and or race, which is not acceptable at all. Whereas if he were to say, we want to ban X number of people based on their expressed extremist views, yeah, then that would be a completely different kettle of fish.
And also there's a kind of, so the person they had up against Tulip was Nick Ferrari from LBC, and he was doing that, what I think of like the classic white man argument, mm-hmm, about how, you know, it would be just as bad to ban Donald Trump for his views as for, you know, the things he's actually expressing. I don't agree with him, but we should allow him to come here, make his argument, and then defeat him with our superior logic. And I just think, That's fine for you to say, Nick Ferrari. Mm. How would a Muslim feel? Yeah. Very, very threatened and uncomfortable, I'm sure.
But also, we don't take that tack. No, we don't take that tack with extremists. Like, extremist views, including Trump's, spread because you allow them to. And if you think that we're just much cleverer than people in the past and can therefore... Because people don't have time. They shouldn't have to sit around listening to people and then looking up whether they're right or wrong. I think there's an extent to which when someone's saying... hate speech, you just shut them down because it's not worth it.
Well, it feeds into the sort of idea of microaggressions when it comes to racism, that yes, you can triumph against all of these minor things, but they build up to a broader whole, and you're also having to expend a lot of your time and energy on proving your view to be the superior one when you just shouldn't have to. We should also talk a little bit, I think, about Trump in the kind of American political context. John, I know you, like me, are a staunch fan of The West Wing, so obviously are very well informed about American politics.
Fictitious
American politics. But I feel like this qualifies us a lot to talk about Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Because there is, or at least there has been until perhaps this week, this idea that Donald Trump is a kind of fictitious figure. He couldn't possibly be real, right?
So there was a great Onion story this week, which sort of summed up the mood for me, I think, which was headlined something like, "Increasingly nervous man says that Trump can't possibly win the nomination." and that does seem to sum up the tone. People keep saying, oh, well, after this, he must be finished. But his poll ratings continue to go up.
And he's leading, right?
He is leading the polls. I mean, I think like the next thing we're going to hear is that if he wins the nomination, we're going to get a lot of people saying, oh, well, he can't possibly beat the Democrats.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
But I think everyone started to get a little bit nervous about that as well. I think what's really frightening is quite how receptive people are proving to this kind of... It is proto-fascist rhetoric, this kind of idea that, you know, all our people are a little bit sort of nervous about the state of the world, they're frightened about their futures... And they're very open to the idea of blaming all of that on somebody else.
Yeah, on a single, like Barbara was saying, a single external group of people defined entirely by race or religion with no critical analysis applied to whether that's remotely reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something, in a terrifying way, there is something comforting about the idea that all your problems are somebody else's doing. And if we could just deal with this one problem... We just come up with some kind of solution for this one problem, then everything will be fine. And it's complete nonsense, but frightened people will buy into this stuff.
And even more so, I've become kind of obsessed with all of the sort of, over the last few months of stories about ISIS and terrorism stuff, about how interested we are in removing rationality from the discussion. So we don't want to believe that the Paris attackers just did it because they really believed it was the right thing to do. We want to believe that they were really high on drugs and that's why they behaved the way they did. Same goes for that attack in that tourist resort in Tunisia. All the tabloids were very keen to report how the guy was off his face on drugs and that's why he did this terribly barbarous thing. Not because he rationally decided that was a good idea. And I feel like there's something of that at play as well, that if you believe that all, as Donald Trump is suggesting, that all Muslims are awful and should be banned from your country, it's because of their religion. It's not because they, as rational beings, have decided this. It's some kind of external faith-based factor. So you can remove the humanity from them and their motivations. But you're absolutely right about this creeping fascism. And I do think fascism is the right word for it. It might be considered a bit overblown by some, but I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it is either. I think one of the problems we have with dialogue and discussion around this is that because we have this vision of Nazis as this kind of sort of, you know, this sort of, you know, evil people in shiny uniforms, we've kind of othered that as well. Like the Nazism is something external, it's something you have to fight. Mm. Whereas actually, these instincts are kind of, I have a horrible feeling these instincts in some form are in all of us. We're all capable of being frightened and sort of led by our sort of reptile hindbrains to do horrible things to other groups of people as a self-defense mechanism. So, you know, the people in Germany in the early 1930s did not think they were part of a movement that would come to be seen as evil. They thought they were defending their country. And, you know, I think a lot of the rhetoric we're hearing at the moment comes from the same place. But because we think of Nazism as something that happened in a particular time, in a particular place, we have no language to talk about that.
Mm. But also, I mean, that's why the argument that, oh, we'll just discuss it with them and then we'll all come to an agreement kind of doesn't really make sense. Because, again, people in Nazi Germany did think they were being rational. And they the entire country kind of decided that this was an acceptable thing to do. And I think the really worrying thing is the fact that it obviously has convinced people. So around 2/3 of people who are likely to vote Republican agree with Trump's proposal. Bloomberg did a poll about this. And also Bloomberg then tried to explain to these people the two sides of the argument, which reduced the numbers by 1%.
1%?
So actually, I don't think that it's fair to say that you just let people rant and rave and be racist and then expect everyone to realize it's wrong. Sometimes you just need to know something's wrong and to kind of stop people thinking about it. And so around 20% of Democrats agreed with the proposal, which meant that overall about 37% of Americans who were polled in this survey believe that Muslims should be banned from entering the US.
Which is
awful.
Awful and really, really shocking. Because I know we feel like we know that America, that this, the political center in America is right of where the political center is here. Because, you know, for instance, two of our right-wing politicians, David Cameron and Boris Johnson, have come out very strongly condemning Trump's comments. You know, no equivocation on their part. Just, this is wrong. You shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
You can't say that. Whereas that's just not the case in America.
I mean, they're just frightened. I mean, after the Paris attacks, apparently the mood in the US was incredibly terrified. People wouldn't say the word ISIS. Everything was shut down in a way that I wouldn't say it was here in Europe. And perhaps it's to do with 9/11. Perhaps it's to do with the national kind of take on things. So in a weird kind of way, I think the US is actually the perfect ground for extremism of this kind to breed. Because these are extreme views of a different kind, but that's basically what it is, that Trump is preying on people's fear in order to implant very extreme racist ideas.
That said, I do feel very strongly that the UKIP tendency in British politics at the moment comes from the exact same place psychologically.
It does, yeah.
And UKIP voters are very in favour of this proposal.
And Nigel Farage has come out and not condemned this, so, you know, it's not like our hands are clean here, guys.
Yes, fair enough. Thanks very much, John and Barbara.
You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast, presented by me, Helen Lewis, and produced by Anna Leskovitz. You can find us every week at newstatesman.com/podcast or on iTunes. Our theme music is Devil with the Devil by the Underscore Orchestra, licensed under Creative Commons.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.